Good morning. The tobacco splitworm is Thoramea perculella. It's also called the potato tuber worm. It's specific to the Solanaceae family, so it attacks cash crops such as tomatoes, potatoes, tobacco, eggplant, and also other solanaceous plants such as horsenettle and physalis. It's usually found on potatoes, but it's become an increasing problem in North Carolina in the last 7 years. We usually find it in the eastern regions of the state, and we have found that it's more severe in drought periods such as 2002 when we saw an increasing problem. It's traditionally a pest on white potatoes, so we consider it an early season pest, but now it can be found throughout the growing season from the beginning of potatoes to the end of the tobacco season. And the summer conditions that we grow tobacco in can produce generations in about 18 days, so this results in 7 to 8 generations per season. We don't know very much about Thoramea perculella as a tobacco pest. It's generally studied as a potato pest. We don't know the damage relationship or the economic threshold in relation to tobacco. When we have an outbreak in a field, we don't have any efficacious insecticides available to take care of it. And we don't understand a lot of ecological aspects of this insect. We know that it doesn't die of frost, so we don't understand its winter survival in our state. This is damage from this season in one of my trials. This is a late season, and you can see here these are all last instar larvae, so this is just an example of the kind of damage they do. This is 9 just in this one leaf. This is another example just from the top, so you can see what it would normally look like. These leaves come from a wild infestation from a farmer we have in Brunswick County. This county is in our southeastern region of the state, so it's on the coast, and he has recurring problems each year. This is an example of what kind of damage they can do throughout, so this is one row. And just to explain tobacco, we harvest it in sections of about 4 sections over a period of about 2 weeks per section. So just from the damage of this, you can see that he's lost most of his first harvest and the mines are moving up the plant. This is a basic life cycle of the tobacco splitworm. The first one here is a last instar larvae. It's just come out of a potato and it's going to pupate soon. This pupa is next to sand, so you can see it is very small. This is about a 3-day-old pupa, and you can tell because of the color. When they first pupate, they're a whitish-green color, and just before the moth comes out, they turn into a dark brown, almost black color. This is a female moth that I watched while she was emerging as a moth. It takes them about 20 minutes to emerge, and then almost immediately after she emerged, she started calling for a mate. And within 24 hours of her emergence, she had already mated and begun to lay eggs. To match the wild populations that we're trying to replicate in our research, we had to be able to rear our own insects. And to maximize our potential to be able to rear high enough numbers, we had to come up with some new ways of rearing a colony. So this is our baker's rack that we use to have potatoes in that are infested, and we collect the pupae from this. And this is our CO2 chamber, so we put the collected pupae in here and collect the malts when they emerge, and it's just a better way to collect for high numbers of populations. Our research goals were to establish a damage relationship between the splitworm populations and tobacco weight on flue-cured tobacco, and to hopefully come up with perhaps an economic threshold. And we also wanted to conduct trials to test insecticides for splitworm control. The normal ones that we have now that are registered, unfortunately, at best, have about a 40% efficacy. So in 2006, we did one damage trial and one efficacy trial, and this was on 2 insecticides. In 2007, we did 2 damage trials, one early season and one late season. The early season is on the tobacco just a little bit after it's been put in the field, about the size you would normally think of about cabbage. And the late season is just a little bit before we do harvest. And then we did one efficacy trial on 2 insecticides. In 2008, we did 2 damage trials again, one early season and one late season, and 2 efficacy trials, and these included 3 insecticides. This is the plot design that I used for example. This is the late season of 2008. And each square represents one plant. All of the green squares are the buffers. These keep the splitworms from infesting other plots. And each color represents how many splitworms were put on each plant in the plot. So for example, all of the white plots had 120 splitworms applied to each plant in that plot. and we did 4 plots in a randomized block design to ensure statistical stability. So in 2006 and late 2007, we didn't have any significant results. And there are possible reasons why this may have occurred. In 2006, we had a very healthy tobacco season, and this was also our preliminary trials, and the colony was not large enough to support large numbers coming out, so we had low introductions this year. So combine that with the good weather, we think perhaps the tobacco may have compensated for the low numbers that were put in. And in late 2007, we had a couple of problems. With our early season 2007 test, we sprayed after the season, the first generation was done to ensure that they didn't infest the rest of the field, but because we didn't have insecticides that worked, we didn't really control them, and there was an eruption of splitworms from that study into the late 2007 season. And also there was a drought, so this really made the numbers explode. And because of the drought also, there were complications in harvesting and curing, so most of the data from this particular test was compromised. In 2007, in the early trial, and both early and late in 2008, we had significant differences in the dry weight based on the populations. And learning from the experience in 2007 with our problem with the efficacious insecticides, when ours was done this time, we used an insecticide we had tried in the 2007 season and found to be very efficacious. So we used this to preserve our late season data. This is our early season 2007 data, and you can see here it's the dry weight in grams, but this is per plot, so 5 plants, as compared to the splitworm density per plant. And there's a negative correlation at negative 0.3206, and if there were no splitworms, we expected about 294 grams per plot. We have a p-value of 0.01, so it's statistically significant, and the r-squared here is 0.46, so we're accounting for about half of the variability in the weight just based on the splitworm density per plant. This is the early and late season 2008 combined, so it's still by the plot, so 5 plants as compared to population density per plant. The correlation is even more significant here at negative 0.88, and we expect it to be around about 305 grams per plot if there were no splitworms. The p-value here is statistically significant, and the r-squared is 0.49, so we're still accounting for about half of the variability just by the population per plant. So our insecticides. We tried 5 over the course of these studies, and we found that acephate, acetamiprid, and the lambda cyhalothrin were spotty at best with very bad results in most of our trials. The novaurin and the rynaxypyr are a different story. This is our 2008 trial, just as an example of the data that we've been getting, and you can see here that the controls had a significant difference. What we did, we had the same plot set up, but we put out 80 splitworms per plant in this trial, and then we sprayed at either 1 day or 3 days after the application, and the control was not sprayed at all. And in this control, you see that the total count per plot averaged at right around 300. And per plant, we were still ending up with about 60 out of the 80 that we had initially set out. And the rynaxypyr, after 1 day, had no mines that were residual. And then the rynaxypyr, after 3 days, only had an average of about 1 per plot. The novaurin at 1 day and 3 days were approximately the same, with about 3 or 4 per plot. So they're both statistically significant in their differences in the controls. So in conclusion, in 2007, as well as both of our trials in 2008, the splitworm populations caused a significant decrease in the dry weights in the tobacco and accounted for about half of the weight loss. And 2 of the insecticides we have are showing promising results for splitworm control, and we could possibly establish economic thresholds from this data. So in 2008, if we look at our methods, the trial suggests that a splitworm infestation of about 10 larvae per plant in your field would result in a loss of about 33 kilograms per hectare of tobacco, or you would lose about $90 per hectare. Insecticidal treatments for splitworms will soon be available to tobacco farmers, and we're currently doing work to understand the ecological aspects of the tobacco splitworm. I'd like to thank the North Carolina Tobacco Research Commission for their monetary support, the Central Crops Research Station for their help in the field, of course the Sorensen Lab for their support, and Consuelo Arellano for her statistical consulting. I can take any questions.
Okay, we have 2 minutes for questions. So are there any current pesticides that register for components of 51 or 52 or no?
They are registered, but you wouldn't want to waste your money on them. We are working, Rynaxypyr, we hope will soon be registered, but Novuron isn't yet.
When do you spray them? As soon as the first sign of the pest, or you haven't figured that out?
It depends. I mean, most farmers aren't going to notice as soon as there is an outbreak. It's going to be a couple generations in. So that's why we did the sprays at different days to see how late they could wait to spray. So, I mean, you could tell that even after 3 days, there wasn't that much difference in spraying one day after you see a pest or a mine.
Okay.